Hello, everybody. Good morning again. Thank you for joining us. I hope today's session will be of great interest to you as it was to me. As Lou and I have been talking, yeah. A lot of the scriptures, right, Lou, are all very, very scientific. And Lou and I were just having a discussion off camera about that.
Yeah, I was just saying how this is a plot twist. I didn't expect this to get scientific. And again, this is where your perspective becomes fascinating to me, because a lot of people who are into this and talking about this have been into these scriptures their entire life. You haven't been that way. You came to it as a man of science. You're a psychiatrist, an accomplished psychiatrist, highly educated, and it's just a different view on these things. So I think it's fascinating that you can incorporate this on you, that you can, and how you did incorporate this into your view on the world.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're saying that, Lou, because science and religion are melded together in a way in these scriptures that I have not found anywhere else. And that's what I found. Otherwise, I had basically, I think all our listeners know, if they've listened to the earlier parts of this, that I had basically walked away from religion. I said, I don't believe in all these rituals and everything else, going to the temple, offering stuff. I didn't believe in it because I said, there's no science to this.
Yeah.
But now that I'm seeing the scientific validity of this, it's really fascinating to me. And so I'm glad that you're saying that, because I'm sure you, the viewer, the listener, many of you might have similar questions. And I would love for you, if you're doing this on a podcast while you're driving to work, when you get home, log on to Facebook. On Facebook, it's called The Gita - Memoirs of a Psychiatrist. Put down your questions, your comments, your criticisms, your suggestions, so that I can be benefited from it. Maybe I can benefit somebody else with your comments, suggestions, and criticisms.
Yeah, often these, when we talk about spiritual things like this and philosophical things like this, we often find it at odds with science and at odds with our everyday life and what we experience. So this is going to be fascinating how this all works together.
Right. So verse 27, 28, and 29, we're going to do over, because the last time I did it, we talked about gunas of Prakriti, and it didn't make much sense to a lot of people. People have commented to me, written to me, and said, what exactly does that mean? And so listen to verse 27 again, because I sort of fluffed over it last time. Actions in all cases are performed by the gunas, which are qualities, of Prakriti, which is nature. One who is deluded by egoism thinks that I am the doer, right? That's what verse 27 says.
Right.
Verse 28 says, but he with true insight into the distinctions of gunas, qualities, and actions, knowing that gunas as senses abide in gunas as objects, is not attached. It's like craziness, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you just listen to this, you say, what is he talking about? This is bizarre. And I often go back to what the British said when they first came to India and they were looking at this. They said, this is the mumbling, I don't know the exact words, but they said, this is the babbling of humankind and civilization in its very, very infantile stages.
Right.
Far from it. This is so scientific, as I will talk about now, that once you understand it, all this craziness makes a lot of sense. So let's go there. Okay, without further waste of time. I made some notes so that I'm going to be looking at it. So everything in this world is performed by the gunas of Prakriti. And I will explain what this means to you. So the world is made up of matter on the one hand and consciousness on the other hand. So matter, for example, our bodies are matter. Without consciousness enlivening it, the matter doesn't come to life, doesn't do anything, it's just dead.
Right.
That I think all of us recognize, that matter requires Atman, consciousness, Purusha. There are many names to this consciousness, right? We cannot,
right.
We've talked about this in earlier episodes, that there is no way to describe what this consciousness is. You can use it, the analogy of electricity. You can use the analogy of light.
Right.
You can use any analogy that you want, but it still will not explain to you what consciousness, God, intelligence, Sat, Chit, Anand, existence, bliss and consciousness. Those are the three main definitions of God. But without God, this Prakriti does not get illumined. It does not get enlivened. So an ignorant person thinks that this Prakriti, whether this is, and I'm talking about all matter, right? Mm-hmm. We can look at our matter body as the ultimate in terms of matter because it's the easiest to understand. But I'm taking it to mean all matter, not just an elephant, a dog, a tree, a stone, a mountain. All of this is matter. All of it has consciousness in it that sort of enlivens it. You may say, well, what are you talking about? There's no no living in a
rock.
A mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, what'd you say?
A rock or a mountain?
A rock.
Yeah.
So if you really look at it, that rock inside has atoms and molecules that are changing, right? I mean, what is coal? What is coal? It is, as the coal gets harder, it becomes carbon, becomes a diamond. Has it moved? Has it changed?
No.
So if it changed, if it moved, was there something doing that within it?
Yeah.
Think about it. How did it transform from a piece of wood or something that had carbon in it to a diamond ultimately?
Or how did
millions of years.
Or how did this matter form a piece of wood, and how did this matter form a rock, and how did this matter form a mountain or a bird?
So there is something in that that is making it move. So we recognize that there is a pattern in each one of these things, even though we don't see it. Things move. Mountains move. Rocks move. They may not move as quick as you and I move, or a bird moves, but they move. There is some kind of movement going on, at least within itself, as the atoms and molecules change to form it. So, are we okay so far with that?
Yes.
If that's the case, then what this is saying is that there's matter and there's consciousness. An ignorant person, deluded by his sense of doership, that's what this is saying, thinks that he's the one that's doing it.
Mm.
He attributes whatever happens with his body and mind to himself, but really it's the gunas of his body, mind, and intellect that's doing it, not even the consciousness. It's not consciousness that's doing it. Consciousness does not do anything. That consciousness that only gives him life. So then, wait a second. Why does one person do things that are kind and gentle and is a saint, and another person do terroristic things? It is the vasanas within him, which are the gunas, which are his nature, that cause him. So what he did in his previous lives produced in him vasanas that were cruel, or produced in him vasanas that were kind. And now those vasanas are producing him, his prakriti, his nature, to behave a certain way. Are we okay so far?
Yes.
This is pretty heavy, guys. So
it is.
Just think very carefully as I'm saying it. If you don't understand it, go back, listen to it again, write to me on Facebook, and we will talk about it some more. So our body, our mind, our intellect are essentially the clothes of the Atman. It's like wearing clothes, right? I'm wearing a shirt, you're wearing a shirt. Imagine like science fiction that those clothes start working on their own. They're walking around, they're doing things. You say, whoa, wait a second, how are my clothes doing this?
Yeah. We'd call that a malfunction.
Yeah, or science fiction.
Yeah.
So in our case, our body, mind, and intellect has been enlivened by the consciousness. But here's the crazy part. It is now doing things off its own accord.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is hard to understand because you say, wait, no, you're enlivened by the consciousness. You're saying consciousness is doing this. God is doing this. It's not God. You mentioned in our previous session one time about free will.
Yes.
Right? You said the free will. So yes, there is a part of you which is should be residing in the buddhi, in the intellect, that says, don't do that.
Right.
I know what you as the mind, as the vasanas are telling me what to do, but don't do it because it's not right. That's your free will controlling it. But again, it's part of the good gunas of your intellect that are telling you not to do that. And
right.
For that, you have to develop the intellect. So our dress is made of the prakriti, which is nature, which is matter. And consciousness, which is enlivening this, is also known as Brahma or Brahman or Atman or Purusha. Now, Prakriti forms the whole world, the universe, Mars, Moon. This is all matter.
Right.
All of this comes from that, okay? Earth, our body, our minds, our intellects is all matter. Stay with me here because it's very fascinating. It also talks about the chaos theory.
Yes.
And talks of the Big Bang and how it came about. So Prakriti in some places in the Gita and the scriptures is also called Maya. Maya means illusion. So what the Gita is telling us, scriptures is telling us, that consciousness actually produces this matter. And so it goes back into consciousness because it's God that basically produces this. So you're really an illusion. It's not true. It's not like a magician making an illusion, not like that.
Right.
But you are not really there because you're going to go back into being consciousness again. Are you with me?
Yes.
Lou?
Okay. Yes.
I hope everybody else is with me too.
I'm not saying I'm not going to watch this again, but I'm with you so far.
Okay. So each of these prakriti, each nature has in and of itself three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. I don't know that there's any English way to translate this, but sattva is equanimous, good, calm, rajas is activity, and tamas is laziness or inertia.
Yeah.
In the matter of Mars, for instance, or Earth, you can't really talk about goodness or equanimity. You can't talk about action or inertia, or can you? You can.
Can talk about inertia, yes.
Yeah. So all matter, the scriptures say, has an inherent tendency in itself to be motionless. And that is the tamas part of this guna. All matter also has in it the desire or the drive to be constantly in motion or in action. Okay? And all matter has in it an intelligence that is a undescribable, unimaginable, unrecognizable form of intelligence that makes it do things in a certain pre-prescribed way that we haven't necessarily desire at this point, but is there. And we'll talk about that third part, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, so, because it's sounding like physics up until that point.
Yeah.
Sounds like so, we're talking physics up until we put that quality on it.
Yeah, wait to get there.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before, you know, motionless, a rock is motionless. You say, yeah, rock is motionless. What are you talking about? There's motion there. So in that rock that's sitting there, that's motionless, there's motion going on. You don't recognize that it's slow, but over millions of years, that rock now transforms into a diamond. So how did that happen? Change happened. Mm-hmm. There was rajas. There was movement that was causing this. We can recognize it within ourselves, right? Tamas, rajas, and sattva. And most people who talk about this don't talk about anything else other than the human beings. But this sattva, rajas, and tamas is experienced everywhere else. And that's the part that I'm getting to. When you talk about yourself, I get up like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. More and more people are telling me I'm crazy that I'm getting up that early. But it's at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm able to contemplate. I'm able to read this. I'm able to understand it. It sinks in. I'm peaceful. I'm sitting there. It's fascinating to me that at a certain time, just before dawn or at dawn, as the light starts to come through the windows, my mind starts to shift towards, hey, I've got to call this one. I've got to do this. I have to write such and such. My mind starts to move into the rajas. Mm-hmm. It's automatic. I cannot prevent it. I'm saying this is a fascinating thing I want to do, but my mind is already moving into that rajasic part. So the sattvic period is over. The rajas starts to take over, right? And the evening comes when the sun starts to set, and I say, okay, I should do some studying, I should do some this, and my mind just says, nah, I just want to relax. I just want to be tamasic.
Right.
Very important to note that that's what happens in the rest of the world too. Every one of us has a rajasic period, a sattvic period, a tamasic period. I asked you before, Lou, if you knew. So for those of you who are in India, you may not recognize that they're in here in the United States. If you look behind me,
yes.
Lou was saying how there's snow here, right? Look, yeah. Can you see the snow out there? I don't know if you, I can't see it.
Not a great view of it, but yeah.
Okay, but there's snow out there. And the trees have no leaves, no
right.
flowers, no leaves. Everything is brown and dead wood. At a certain point, folks, in April, May, whenever we think of as spring, there's leaves that start to sprout on the trees.
Right.
And it's like clockwork, just like in India, for those of you who are watching in India. There's the monsoon. When is it? I forgot. I left India about 50 years ago. It's June of 13th or 12th or something like that, that the monsoon on as clockwork comes about with the monsoon. I'll look up the date. But like clockwork, the date of that monsoon starts, the rains start, and they go on to a certain period of the winds come, and that's when these sailors like Vasco da Gama and other people, when they came to India, would catch the winds coming from Africa, pushing their ships towards India a certain way. They said, this is the best way to get there because the winds will push us. That's the way the winds go.
Right.
Who determines that? How did that come about? In the past, I used to hear, well, God determines it. And in a way, that's true, that's correct, but not in the way I understood it. I understood them to say, well, God is up there, he's looking down, and he's saying, okay, blow it, you know,
right.
it's yeah. not that.
He's pulling levers and turning knobs and making everything
Doesn't
happen on time. Yeah.
This intelligence, this sattvic quality of the prakriti, sattvic guna of the nature, is what causes it. Bear with me, it makes a lot of sense. I said, what makes spring come about? And I said, do you know,
yeah.
Lou? What
yeah.
would you say?
I would say science tells us in our orbit that our relationship with the sun changes, things warm up, the trees feel this trend of warming, and they start producing leaves. It's that time of year.
That's what most people believe. That's what I believed,
mm-hmm.
right? I said, but now with the global warming, in February, it can be 70 degrees. And you say, well, how come the trees are not confused and coming about with leaves? Even though with global warming, you know, I know, that there are days that are very warm as if it's spring.
Right.
Some days are warmer than it would have been in previous springs. Am I right?
Yes.
How come there's no leaves? So I looked it up. I said, how is that possible? Why is it that these leaves, the trees know that it's not yet April or May when the leaves come about?
Mm-hmm.
What nature, prakriti, has done in its sattvic period is to say, you are going to have warm days because the earth and the atmosphere will go through global warming, global ice age, and back and forth. Don't get confused with that. One thing that is not going to change is the orbit of the earth and the sun. One thing that is not going to change is the number when the sun rises in terms of the longer the days. So as you get closer to spring, the one thing that is determined is that the days are going to get longer.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
What is it? December 21st. So March 21st. March 21st is the equinox.
Right.
When the days start to get longer because the sunlight is greater. That's what trees use as their determining factor.
Oh, length of sunlight.
Length of days, length
yeah.
of sunlight, and light in, not the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Because temperature can change.
Sure.
What doesn't change is the equinox. So it says, okay, March 21st came about, the days are getting longer, and it waits for a certain period of time, and boom, after that, the leaves come out. So that is a very planned kind of thing, which we didn't know. But the Gita knew it.
Mm.
Scriptures knew it. It says, hey, even your whole world, your universe is like that. I said, wait, what are you saying again? Now, that's where this comes of interest, right? In matter, it remains motionless. There's motion. And that is called rajas. And everything that we notice in intelligence, it's not a mad world. It's not haphazard, okay? Everything is planned. Everything that appears to be erratic or chaotic is very scientifically determined. And that's the part of chaos theory that when was it, Lou? Do you remember that they talked about chaos theory some years ago?
Yeah.
When I first heard about it, they came about and I said, wow, this is fascinating. For those of you who don't know what chaos theory is, look it up. It's too long to describe here. But they say that in all chaotic things that happen in the universe, there is order and sense. We're determining that now, right?
Yeah.
The scriptures talked about this going back when. You were saying something.
Chaos theory basically states there is no randomness. It's just we haven't determined the pattern.
Correct.
Right? What we see as randomness is just a pattern we haven't determined yet.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So planets, etc., they were formed with logic and intelligence. This is called sattva. The sattva of Prakriti is this whole intelligence with which everything was determined. Sattva in a human being is quality of being equanimous, good, kind, decent, thinking of others. But in the whole planets and everything else that is matter, sattva determines the logic and intelligence behind, like, plants coming up and those kinds of
things. Can I challenge you on that for a second?
Please.
The word intelligence, because I'm raised Catholic, and when I think intelligence, I'm thinking of a guy with a white beard sitting on a throne, pulling levers and buttons, and in a workshop, putting the world together. Is that the type of intelligence we're talking about?
No.
Yeah.
No. It's not that kind of intelligence. Right. It's the kind of intelligence that I was just describing with the trees determining when the leaves to come about.
Right.
Now, is that intelligence with a guy with a white beard?
No.
Is that, does a tree have intelligence that it can say, well, this is 2 + 2 = 4? No.
It's
not that kind of intelligence.
Intelligence is interactive patterns recognizing other patterns and reacting to them.
So each one of us, whether, I mean, is the rock that becomes a diamond intelligent?
No.
That level of change in that carbon that ultimately makes it into a diamond has its own form of whatever you call it. I called it intelligence.
Right.
But it's a predetermined pattern of behavior. You know, we saw these grandfather clocks in the past, or cuckoo clocks.
Yes.
We used to, I don't have them, they're not there anymore. But you used to actually have to go to the back and wind a key.
Right. Yep.
Once you wound that key, you're giving it that energy, you close the door and you wait. And the clock starts moving, the hands start moving, and at the particularly determined time of 12 noon is poop, 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 the cuckoo clock comes out, right?
Yeah.
The cuckoo comes out. Have you ever seen those?
Yes. That's a great example because clockwork mechanics is almost the definition of this interaction of forces, where you give it the energy and all the gears and all the machinery and the clockwork turn it into time, turn it into that chime at the top of the hour.
Right.
Yeah.
So that, without winding that clock, it didn't work.
Right.
That energy, once you wound it, there was a certain kinetic energy, static electricity, the power energy that was placed in there, that as it dissipated into the clock, it started to do its thing according to pre-programmed by the watchmaker, by the clockmaker, pre-programmed, predetermined ways of acting, and it came about.
And it took multiple interfaces of that, of these different patterns to produce the end result.
Right. How much time have we gone into, Lou, already?
We're 23 minutes in.
Okay. This one's going to be a long one then. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But I can't, we can't.
It's all right. I'm enjoying
leave
it.
Leave this unfinished here.
Yeah.
But sattva is intelligence, rajas is activity, and tamas is inertia. When they're all in equilibrium, everything is equal, the universe, we are in sleep. It's called laya. And laya is sleep, like our sleep. Like when we are asleep, we don't know anything. Our equilibrium is there. Sattva, rajas, tamas is all in equilibrium. Similarly, the whole universe is in equilibrium at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? At that time, just like in sleep, we go back into a seed state. You remember in one of our earlier episodes, we talked about the seed state of ourselves. Everything is there. The deep sleep is there, the subjective nature is there, the objective nature is there, but in deep sleep, we don't know it. But when the seed emerges, a tree comes out, a stem, leaves, fruit, everything comes out from that very same seed that had everything encapsulated in there.
Right.
similarly to us when we're in deep sleep. We're in deep sleep. We're going into that sleep. When we come out, all of this comes. The universe has its own sleep, believe it or not. Okay? What the scriptures described is that it goes from bindu to nada. Bindu to nada. Now, bindu means a dot, just like you have a dot on the forehead, a woman has. Bindu is a dot. It can be as small as the tip of a needle. Bindu. So the universe goes into contraction, and we know this from science, that they've said the universe goes into a bindu and then explodes out like a big bang. So that's the nada. So when that happens, the universe, when it goes into deep sleep, it's all three are in equilibrium, sattva, rajas, and tamas. When it explodes like that, it's gone into this rajasic phase. And then the planets and everything come out, and all those planets have their own characteristics, just like the cuckoo clock.
Right.
Okay. When it comes into that cuckoo clock version, then nobody's standing there saying, okay, Mars, you go here, and Moon, you go there, and Sun, you go there, center of the galaxy, be there, and the Sun is going to move around. By the way, most people don't know that the Sun moves around the center of the galaxy.
Right.
Sun, you go around the galaxy, will take you so many million years to go around the center, and Earth, you go around the Sun, and it'll take you so much time. No, who told them that? Who told them that? And what is going to happen in so many billion years from now, where they say, okay, it's going to go back into, collapse into it of itself? So the scriptures describe that as so many days and nights of Brahma. So there came the bindu and the nadi. And the whole world is an expression of prakriti, of nature, that we were talking about before.
Right.
Now, I don't think we'll have time for this today. Maybe we should stop this. But what I want to give you, friends, is before I leave, before we stop, just wanted to, this is what I wrote, but there's no way we can do this in the next. So these are all the ways in which the 24 components of nature. The 24 components. Now we may say, okay, so nature has planets, it has, but the Gita breaks it down into, scriptures break it down into 24 tattvas. Each 24 tattvas that make up the world, the universe, you, me, all matter.
They're the building blocks of everything that exists?
This is the building blocks of everything. Those are the components. And how they interact is based on the gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And we will get to that. So, my friends, thank you for listening. I know we're getting into really deep stuff here.
Oh, this is so good. It is so good, though.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're saying that, Luke, because I was worried.
Because, no.
You know, I'll tell you an interesting story, and then we'll stop. When we would go for these classes, even though this was not the kind of deep level that we were talking about, In the classes, I took two of my physician friends, who were like the brightest physicians of Indian origin, to these classes. Mm-hmm. And they were used to doing prayers and pujas and rituals and stuff like that. So they thought maybe that that's what they were going to experience.
Right.
When I first went, I said, this is fascinating. I couldn't stop going. I was like a shadow after that. I went to every class. These two guys came. They sat there. I'm watching them, and they're like falling asleep throughout.
Yeah.
Because their mind just couldn't get around this higher level of consciousness. And at the end, they woke up, and the teacher said, Swami Gautam Jain said, do you have any questions? And this one guy raised his hand. He says, all of this that you're saying is very good, but can you just tell us simply, what do I have to do to reach God? What prayers do I do? And he, you know, was shocked. He said, I've been telling you all along how to lead life. There's no simple prayer or mantra that you can do, but people just cannot get their minds around this, and then they, you know, don't grasp it. So I was worried coming here today that this is at a deeper level.
No, it's important to understand the waters that we swim in, if I can use that metaphor. It's important to understand all of our existence and how we fit in. That's.
I'm glad you're saying that, Lou, because last time I just skipped over it. If you go back to verse episode 35 or 36, whenever it was that I talked about verses 27, 28, 29, I skipped over them, basically saying, you'll see what I said. But then I got these comments, and which people didn't understand. They said, nothing is wasted in the Gita. Everything has some reason. What is the reason for this? So I thought with some trepidations that I should say this or not say this. So I'm glad you said what you said. No. I'm glad it was of interest.
Enjoying. But friends, no, it's great.
Next time we will talk about these, the building blocks of the 24 tattvas, which are the building blocks of the Prakriti, the universe, and all matter. Thank you so much for joining us. I would sincerely hope that you would, if you're listening to this on podcast, go to Facebook, The Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist, put down your comments, your questions, your criticisms, your suggestions. Work with me so we can make this better for your children, my children, future generations, the world itself. Thank you so much.